Monday! Open wide dev fans! Get ready to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, Node Modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development, the hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. On this Monday Hasty Treat, we're going to be talking about clean and sloppy code. And we're going to be talking all about different ways that you could enforce rules, establish rules, enforce rules, automate, and document to make sure that your code is always clean. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver. This episode is sponsored by Sentry at sentry.io, S-E-N-T-R-Y.io. Sentry is the perfect place to see all of your errors and exceptions happening in your project, but also how to understand what's going on in your project. So this episode's about clean code. And if you're writing clean code, well, that's only going to help when you're trying to solve problems because things are going to be named correctly. They're going to be labeled correctly. And we're going to be able to dive in and see exactly what went wrong and where. But not only that, Sentry does a great job of just constantly improving. They're introducing like constantly new features, which is always shocking to me because I open up Sentry so often that it's really awesome just how many times there's something new popping up. For instance, they just launched a session replay, which allows you to get a video reproduction of your user session so you can see exactly what happened. It's a brand new feature that, you know, is brand new to Sentry. And really, this thing's super neat and it works really well with all of the other ways that you manage all of your own errors in your application. So check it out at sentry.io. If you use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, you'll get 2 months for free. I have the cough that will never go away. I swear it's not COVID, but I've been coughing for like 3 weeks straight, y'all. So I'm going to do my very best not to cough into the microphone here. I'm sure it will be cut out if it will. My name is Scott. Again, with me as always is Wes. What's up, Wes? How's it going?
Oh, good, good. I am currently battling a performance issue, which is a very peculiar one. Maybe I'll give you a quick rundown of it. The uses.tech website, I converted it from Gatsby static to Remix server rendered yesterday, and I deployed it. And I was like, whatever, I'm gonna do this real quick. I banged it out and I deployed it. And then a couple people were like, it's giving me like 5 seconds of white before I see it. And it's like the server response is kind of slow, like 600-700 milliseconds. So I can improve that by caching the result, but that's not 12 seconds slow, like, or 10, some, like I ran it through web page speed test. So I think I'm hitting up against some like rendering errors because there's so much HTML on the homepage that,
wow,
because it downloads the CSS and the HTML fairly quickly, but apply, and it's not JavaScript related because it's HTML and CSS, right? Like the browser should be able to do that. And if I run it locally, it runs super fast. So I'm going to dig into that after this. I just can't figure out what the issue is.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. It's curious. Gotta love those types of curious little ones, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of excited about it because it's just like, it's not something super clear to me.
Yeah.
It's clearly one of those like Chrome graph things that I need to dig into. So I might make a video on the issue and how I solve it.
Yeah, if you want to ever be a good developer, I think the fact that you just said, I don't know what's going on, I'm excited to find out. Like that to me is it's like what makes you a good developer. And that's typically what makes a good developer is someone who they reach a problem, especially one that is mysterious. They don't get like concerned or frustrated. You get like curious. You get like, maybe I can figure this thing out and learn something from this. So let's talk about sloppy code, which I'm sure is not the problem that you're running into with.
Hope not, yeah. Although I'm no stranger to sloppy code.
Yeah. Yeah. See, sloppy code. Do you remember that Sloppy Joe song? That was a good song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't had Sloppy Joe in a while.
I haven't had Sloppy Joe in a while, and they were never my favorite. I've got to be honest, never really loved Sloppy Joe's.
No, a little too sloppy for me. I prefer to put like some chips in there, make it a little bit less sloppy, more crunchy.
Yeah, if I'm not like a ritzy ritzy meat place, you know, plate that's got like a really good smoked meats and stuff, and they have a sloppy joe that like, yeah, so it's getting a little bit more pulled pork territory.
Elevated.
I'm done with that, but yeah. All right. So sloppy code. To me, sloppy code looks like this. There's no real patterns or conventions established, right? People are doing things the way they want to do them. And everybody has their own experiences, their own other previous code bases. You have a team of multiple people working on this thing and people just add to it. We've all been in code bases where you open it up and it feels like you don't even have any room to breathe because so many people have just piled stuff in here. It's like the closet that they just shoved everything in and shut, and the door shuts, so it's all good, right? The door shuts, we're fine. The closet's fine. We don't need to look in the closet. And sometimes code can be like that too, where you're just shoving stuff in. In fact, we've had many code bases that I've joined in that have existed for, you know, 10 years. When you pop open this code base, and not one that I've authored myself, obviously, because I don't author sloppy code, but where it was just, they just tacked on another CSS file. Why? Because if you use the global CSS file, you might break something. So we're just going to tack another CSS file onto here, and that's just going to be the solution, right? Either way, no patterns or conventions established. There's people writing things the way that they want to be writing them all the time, and nobody's saying, hey, we should come up with a unified way to do this. We should do this all the same way. That way, we can save ourselves the brain power of reading code that all looks the exact same, but also we'll be able to find things when we need them. People really got up in arms about Marie Kondo, but I think she had some good ideas around organization, right? So file organization and naming, it's all over the place. And that's like a huge win, right? Having an established pattern for naming files, naming functions, naming variables, and then having an established file system, the way that you put things, where do you put things? Do you just toss it into the utils folder and call it a day? Is it just another one of the utils? Or do we actually have a way that we organize these things? Where do our components live? Do they live with the routes? Do they live in their own named folder? What is the folder naming? Are the folders named after their models? Like, how are all of these things set up? And the answer isn't necessarily name this way, feature folders, whatever. The answer is a way that everyone in your team knows how to do it and will do it the same way. That's the answer. These problems are typically solved by people just declaring that these things are a way and everybody sticking to that.
Yeah, it's honestly, the tools are getting a lot better in that they can start to enforce these types of things. But there's, I don't know if we'll ever be at a spot where you can 100% enforce these types of things. You often have to have them written down and sort of buy-in from the entire team. For me, a lot of the sloppy code is like tacked on, where like you jump into a code base and you need to add something or fix something, and you don't feel like getting into it all that much. And you're just like, I'll give you a couple examples. My keycode.info website, I sold it like a year ago to TopTal. And they took it and they not rebuilt it, but they turned it into like the way that they do things. So they added style components the style components would live in a separate file for each one. And they added tests for every single possible thing. And then they added everything was in context. And like, basically they not ballooned, but the code is probably 3 or 4 times bigger than it was. Because that's the way they do it. And that all their engineers are able to get in and make their changes, and they sort of just follow that same thing. Whereas versus me, the way I coded it, where it's just like, I had conventions as well, but it was less of multiple files and whatnot. So part of that was the copy paste didn't make it over. So that was a feature that was lost when they rewrote part of it. And I tried to just like, I tried to just add it by saying, when this thing is clicked, copy to clipboard. It's just an inline on click handler, worked great. And it was more than enough, but they didn't want to do it because there was no like integration tests and all this type of stuff. And I was like, you know what? Like, I guess we won't have this feature then, you know? But I guess that could see like the reason they didn't want to do that is not because they wanted it, but if you allow one little inline thing here, one little thing that's outside of the way they do things, then all of a sudden it becomes, okay, there's two ways. Okay, why is this done like this? Okay, and then it becomes a little bit unmaintainable over the years. It starts to rot, you know? So by being a little bit more rigid, I guess they have like longer term on that type of thing.
Yeah, because if there's two ways to do something, there'll eventually be three ways.
Exactly.
Potentially four ways, right? That's never good.
Another one is like reaching outside or using side effects for a quick fix. So here's another example of sloppy code I recently did. The Syntax website, now that Chris edits the podcast, he puts timestamps in the show notes. And the timestamps also get pulled into the Syntax website. But we had never built the Syntax website to handle timestamps. They work in your podcast player if you hit them, tap the show notes with your thumb. But they're never on the Syntax website. And I was like, oh, I could do that. That's all you do is you parse out hours, minutes, seconds into seconds, and then you grab the audio element and you scrub the audio element to the size that you want, and everything else in the React application that is the Syntax website will react to that. The scrubber will move, the saving your location will move, everything else will move. So I just wrote a quick little function that would handle a click on these things and scrub it to the spot, and it worked great, except the one thing was the Syntax website, the actual audio element that plays the podcast, that is the way that you reference an element in React is you use a ref, and you have to pass that ref around so that you can access it, because I needed to set the current time. However, the way that I built the site initially was that the audio element and the show notes are siblings.
Yeah.
And how do you pass something with siblings? You can't. You have to.
You move the state up and you do. Yeah.
Yeah. You pass it down. So I was like, I'm not refactoring this thing. If I built it today, I'd put the audio element as high as you possibly can, because it can live anywhere. It's not visible. But the UI can live anywhere else. So I should have put it higher, but I didn't. What, 6 years ago when I built the thing, and yeah, I wasn't ready. I don't want to refactor it. We want to redo the website anyway. So I was like, you know what? Document query selector all audio dot current time equals blah blah blah, bang, it works, ship it, you know. And that's okay, that's a quick fix for that type of thing. But if we did too many of those, then all of a sudden that's a side effect. I'm reaching onto the page and grabbing it rather than referencing it. And what happens if at some point we want to put two audio players on the page, and now that code will break it? So you got to be careful with those types of things.
Yeah, totally. You do. So, okay. So we understand sloppy code. It can cause problems. It can cause slowdown where you're working. It can, you can be shipping more code than you need to because you don't have a pattern of establishing adding new code. So you're just adding new code all the time. It can cause a lot of problems in your code base, especially over time, of just adding this cruft on to the point where nobody wants to work on it. And eventually you say, oh, maybe we just rewrite this thing from scratch. When in reality, you could probably have something maintainable if you just wrote it maintainable from the start. So we understand sloppy code. We would like to establish rules to fix our sloppy code. And then we want to enforce those rules and automate it where we can. So to establish rules, you're going to have a couple of different types of rules for like repo rules, right? You have a repo. Perhaps it's a mono repo, or perhaps it's just a simple solid repo. Where do your components live? What's your file system like? What's that structure? What are the patterns for how you make folders? When do you make a folder? Is it deeply or shallow? Like, do you have a lot of folders with index files, or do you have an individual folder with a name folder and then a name file within that? These are things that you and your team need to establish, because somebody is going to make a folder with an index file if you don't. And if you don't say no folders with index barrel files or any of that sort of strategy, somebody's going to do it. So you got to have those ideas. If this is the way it's going to be, then this is the way it's going to be. When should a new configuration or package be added, right? Those are big questions. Adding another config is not just another config, right? It's something else. It's like another baby that you're bringing into this world. It's something that you have to make sure is maintained, it's updated. If it updates, then you have to make sure it continues to work. Is this config doing any positive things for you? Is it enforcing these clean code rules? There's a lot of libraries out there that will do that kind of thing. But ultimately, are we just adding things for the sake of adding things or not? Like, when is the process for adding something to the code base? How many people need to be on board for that?
I think scaffolding tools can be helpful here. Where if you need to add, like, let's say you need to add a new component, and for every time you add a component, you need, like, the component itself, you need a styles for that component, you need some integration tests and like, what are some other things that could go, maybe database schema that go along with it.
Just think like Rails, right? The types of stuff that Rails generates for you.
Yeah. Oh, you might need like an update form. You might need a delete form, right? There's so much to that type of stuff. And sometimes scaffolding can be like, do we really need to just duplicate this code over again? And sometimes the answer is no, but sometimes the answer is yes. It's good to have a set of base where all developers can start with, especially if you have 5, 10, 15 developers on your team. It's nice to keep that consistent. Therefore, somebody can jump in at any time and not say, whoever wrote this is different than the way I did it before.
Yeah, totally. Updates. When are packages updated? Who gets to be the person in charge of updating packages and making sure that stuff still works after the update? And how often do you update packages? Those are all questions that you got to know. Because if you're just doing it willy-nilly, sometimes maybe somebody could update something on one branch that causes some weird branch issues of, did you update this on a branch that you were working on a feature on? Or did you update this in another branch and then merge that in? Like, what are those processes? And we have to make sure that everybody's on board with the same idea. And that even goes along with Git strategy too. Like Git strategy is part of clean code in my mind. We're like, what is the flow? When do we create a new branch? How are these branches names? When do we merge them in? How do we merge them in? And those types of things, it's your stuff your team has to all come together on, because if we have rules for all of those, then we can start to enforce those rules in all kinds of ways and just overall make our overall flow better.
I have a question for you. So let's say you're working on a feature on your code base. So you check out a branch and you're working on that feature. And while you're there, you realize, I could refactor this function that is totally unrelated, but I'm in the headspace right now. Or while I'm here, I might as well just update all the dependencies. And then you put in a pull request and it says, all right, this is my pull request to add this feature, but I also fixed X, Y, and Z and upgraded all these dependencies as well. I'm always so very tempted to do that type of thing. Is that something where you would just wait or pause, update those things on the main branch, and then come back to the feature you're working on? Do you have any rules around that?
If you want to know what I do versus what I should do, what I do is that I'm ADHD'd out, and I will just I'll just do it, and then just have that be in my commit message. But I work with like a small team, very small team of a couple people, right? So the larger your team is, the more strict you need to be on all of this stuff. I think for every single person you add to your team, the more check marks of how strict all of these rules need to be. But for me personally, I would just do that even though I know it's wrong and I would feel bad about doing it. I'm like, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm doing it anyways. Ideally, what I would do is I would switch branches, go off the main branch or the working branch and go from there and just do that. I think if I was working in the flow of I need to be organized here and I need everybody else to also be organized, you got to follow the same rules that everybody else is following. So I would try to do that off of another branch if that was a thing I actually really care about.
It's a delicate balance because like at a certain point, your developers are just going to stop caring because there's way too much overhead to get something done. Like you have to get approval and somebody has to do it. And it's just like, I just want to fix this one thing. And it takes me 10 seconds to fix it. But there's 6 meetings and 8 Jira tickets attached to this type of thing in order to get it fixed. And that's really frustrating for developers sort of on the flip side. So I think there's probably some sort of delicate balance to strike there.
Yeah, and you know what, I would think each project that you're starting probably should get some kind of a number, 1 through 10, of how strict the clean code guidelines need to be for this repo. Is this a thing that a lot of people are working on that's going to exist for a long time? 10 out of 10. This is a thing that one person is working on and you're hacking it together on a weekend, 1 out of 10, right? So like for me, every project falls into that realm of like how clean does this need to be? And if it doesn't need to be clean, it is going to take you like, that's actually a huge pet peeve of mine is when things are prototypes or they are small projects or hack things and people want to put in all of this crazy tooling around these clean code things when this thing won't even exist. Like I have often cited this on the show. We were doing a prototype of a experimental interface and these it was like a third party agency hired to do some extra work on it did like visual regression testing on this. It is a prototype. It is a hacked together thing. You don't need visual regression testing, but in a big library that or a big code base, that becomes actually something you'd want. So, you know, it really depends on what you're working on here. And so we also have code rules, right? We have those repo rules, and your code rules can mostly be solved by formatting and linters and hinters, those types of things, right? Basic formatting tools, that can take care of a ton of issues. Prettier, right? We're all using Prettier in 2023. And if you're not, it's easy to add. You should be using Prettier. It doesn't matter if you use the defaults or what, but you should be using something to format your code to have it look nice. But also, we get into the ideas of like, how are functions defined? When do we use the arrow syntax versus the function keyword? Variable naming. Variable naming is often something people are always like, variable naming is hard. Naming things are hard. Everybody says that naming things are hard. So I'm just going to say it too. Naming things aren't hard. You just come up with a system. If it's a Boolean, you could prefix it with an is. If it's not a Boolean, you just name it. You come up with your own system for your own team about how terse or how long the names for things should be. But naming things isn't hard, especially if you have a system for it. How and where is CSS defined? What patterns for class names? You need a pattern for class names, because just like the naming things above, if you don't have a pattern for it, people are going to name things whatever you want. You're going to have a container component. You're going to have a wrapper component. You're going to have a window. All of these things who may very well do the exact same thing. A wrap, a wrapper, a container, who knows, right? So have some rules there.
Yeah.
Say this is the way we write this. I mean, and that's one thing BEM did really well, is it gave people a set of rules to name their classes on.
It's a lot easier when there are rules. I almost wish that I should like come up with my own list of rules.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes I'm like, okay, this is the unparsed value. And sometimes I'll call it like raw or response. And then there's the parsed value, which is like usually that's the variable I want it to be. So customers or podcasts or something like that. So like, what do you name the things that are before that? You know, podcast mm-hmm. raw, podcast response. I should put together just a list of like common things, wrappers, you know, like you said, that's...
Are you spelling wrapper W-R-A or are you starting R-A-P-P-E-R? Well, how are you doing that? But no, those are the types of things that are really important to establish. And I actually have a Notion document of all of ours for our code base, just so anybody can look into at any point. But it's also really well used, essentially, in the code base where we have rules set up. In another one, breakpoints, right? What are the breakpoints? Are you just breaking whenever, you know, there's an issue and like, has that become untenable? Or do you have established breakpoints that you're doing for specific reasons? Are they named perhaps with SAS variables or named using some sort of future CSS thing that you're transforming with post CSS? And what about like commenting out stuff? Like, you know, people always say like leaving commented code is a bad practice. And I gotta say, I agree. Get rid of that stuff. Like, what are your rules for comments and commenting out code or commenting out stuff? We've established rules.
Yeah.
We've understand sloppy code. We've established rules. How do we enforce rules now? Because enforcing these rules is the part where the rules are actually important. Because if you don't enforce rules, they might as well not even be there. So some of this big stuff, you know, GitHub Actions are really, in my mind, one of the most powerful tools here. Granted, GitLab also has CI stuff that you can use as well. But GitHub Actions specifically end up saving you so much, so many issues down the line, right? On commits, on pushes, on anything, you can hook into any of these things and you can format your code. You can run it through a linter. You can say, hey, block these PRs if the TypeScript's not compiling, if the stylint isn't passing, any of these things. And make sure that you enforce these rules in a way that's actually enforceable. Because if somebody can walk past the sign that says, don't go in here, then you might as well not even have it.
Yeah, I was actually working on this on Friday. One of the repos I hardly touch is the burner email list. There's another guy that maintains it, and he was like blocking. Basically, there was a GitHub action that says if it's not alphabetical and or if it's a duplicate or if there's a blank line, then reject the pull request entirely. And I was just like,
mm-hmm.
there's 15,000 lines in here. No one's gonna alphabetical their thing. The computers can do that, you know. Or same thing with coding. Don't block a PR because it doesn't meet your prettier. If you can, your GitHub action can just fix it, lint it, remove it, do whatever it needs to do. And then you just add in another commit where it will commit the fixed values for you. So don't let that be a hassle to somebody if it's something that a computer can fix. And ideally, somebody would be running these things, maybe even pre-commit, but it's possible that somebody puts a pull request in, and if you have to block it because of something silly like that, someone's going to say, all right, I tried to help, but I'm not here to like learn your obtuse setup to submit a typo request.
Yeah, I think there's caveat. I think there's definitely, you know, there are certainly like times where you go to contribute, especially open source projects, where you'll be like, I'm helping. And then the PR comes back and it's like, listen, you didn't jump through 8 hoops. You didn't swallow a flaming sword. And you didn't, you know, get the dogs to stop barking. So we're going to stop this commit from going through. And that can be very frightening. You say, okay, I'm not helping then. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do all this stuff. I don't want to have to read the 8 paragraphs you just gave me about all the things I have to do. But you know what? Hey, sometimes those things are required to have projects that are long living and enforced, right? And if you want to get the work done or want to contribute, then you've got to follow the rules is really what it comes down to. So if the rules are enforced, I think we kind of automate as much as possible, right? Automate, because nobody wants to spend time working on the rules or clean code or anything like that when you don't, you know, you want to be making stuff. I don't want to have to worry about scrubbing my code when I could be worried about the thing that my code's actually doing. So like the easiest wins is, you know, prettier, format on save, ESLint, format on save. Style it, format on save, fix all those things as much as possible for you. So that way, as early as possible, these things are getting taken care of. And then perhaps they're being run again inside of the continuous integration process in a GitHub action or something like that. But again, establish those rules, enforce those rules, automate them. And then the last thing is document them. We've talked about this a little bit, but I have a Notion document that just is all of our different things. Hey, use function declarations like this in all cases except for these, right? You can use inline arrow functions in these ways or whatever. This is how we name variables. We prefer snake case over camel case. We do this, we do that. CSS variables defined in this specific way. Always do CSS variables, never use color variable or color properties in CSS without a variable attached. A lot of really, really neat stuff.
I think that's it.
I think that's it indeed. I hope your code is cleaner, or at least you understand when your code needs to be cleaner, because sometimes code can be dirty and that's fine too. We don't mind that. But sometimes it needs to be clean and we got to scrub it down. So let's get our code clean when it needs to be, and we can write some sloppy code too if we're just exploring. So that's really it. That's all I got. Do you have anything else for me, Wes?
I don't think so. I think that is it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.